What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
You know, the guys got to the big leagues. Oh, they're just more talented. Did you see guys that good down the minors? I shake my head and I'm like, dude, you don't get it. You don't. There are guys that are more talented that never get to the big leagues. Guys that can hit the ball the furthest I've ever seen throw as hard as anybody else, has some of the nastiest stuff as a pitcher that you will come across, but they didn't get to the big leagues because they couldn't put it all together.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. On today's episode, I'm joined by Ryan Ripken, former minor league first baseman who just wrapped up his playing career in the minor leagues, trading in his spikes to move into the media side of things. Ryan walks us through his career, which carries a lot of familiar themes on this show. Struggling with self-doubt during his freshman year of college, working through the mental side of the game, dealing with injuries, and just trying to prove yourself, but with different expectations than your typical ball player, as Ryan spent his career playing with the added expectation that comes with sharing the last name of his father, Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr. Ryan walks through the pros and cons of having a legend for a father, and how he grew into comfort with himself and his own game on the field during his time at South Carolina Junior College and in the minor leagues. Also, he gives the best scouting report of what to do during a day in Baltimore. Just exactly what you want if you're going to Baltimore and want to eat. So tune in for that. Just really insightful conversation from Ryan. Very glad he took the time to come on the podcast and walk us through his story. If you enjoy this episode, Ryan has his own podcast, Off Script with Rip. And if you enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Episodes of Phenom on the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy it, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Those always help. And make sure you subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. Minor League Baseball season, MLB season, the Cape Cod Hot Sheet is going on. That's a new thing, so check that out. And then this is right in the middle of the College World Series, so that should be, we'll be wrapped by our next episode, but tune in for all of BA's college baseball coverage. A lot of good stuff, as always, over at baseballamerica.com. And with that, let's talk to Ryan Ripken. All right, joining in for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm, who's a 15th round pick of the Nationals in the 2014 draft out of Indian River College, former minor league first baseman Ryan Ripken. Ryan, thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Of course. I'm glad we got it on the schedule, and I know it took some time, but I appreciate your patience.
Absolutely. No, I've been looking forward to this. And you have a podcast of your own. So before we dive into your career, tell the folks about it, where they can find it.
So my own personal podcast is Off Script with Rip, and that's on any podcast platform, but you can watch the videos. I video it each week on YouTube. It's just Ryan Ripken. You can search my name. And I also do an Orioles-based podcast. Now I'm getting involved in the media world, so I do some TV and radio covering the team in Baltimore, and that podcast is called just Rip and Rock, also available on all the podcast platforms. So that's what I'm doing post-baseball. But you know what, Kyle? I definitely do miss being on the field, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. But I mean, exciting time to be covering the Orioles, considering how young that team is, how exciting that team is. But I want to dive into you. And the first thing I have to ask you is, someone who, you know, a Maryland native, how many times in your life has someone said to you, like, quoted, like, crab cakes and football, that's what Maryland does?
I mean, if we actually counted, I think we'd have to be in the millions. You know,
I'm sure. I was about to say, if you had a dollar for every time, you wouldn't have to do a podcast.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hey, I've said it thousands and thousands of times. I quote Wedding Crashers religiously. And Maryland's so prideful too. I mean, everyone loves their state, but I'll just be honest. There's something about people that are from Maryland. They really, really take pride of where they come from.
Yeah, so I personally am very fond of Maryland. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, mm-hmm. So we would go to, like, Orioles games and stuff, because obviously Virginia is a barren wasteland for professional sports. So, but let's go back to you. So often I ask, you know, a guy, when did you realize you had a path at the next level? I'll ask you, as being from, you know, a noted baseball family, when did you realize a path in baseball was actually what you wanted? Because with you, with your family, with your name, that comes with some different kind of pressures. When did you decide, like, you know, this is the family business, but this is actually what I want to do? Because when you get to the levels you played at, that takes some want to. That's just not, you know, that takes the effort and the actual passion.
Yeah, I mean, so when I was younger, and you always wanted to, emulate whatever your parents did, right? You looked up to them. So at the time, my dad's job was playing baseball. And because that's what his job was as a kid, I want to play baseball. That's where it started. But to your point, you got to love it and you got to have passion for it. And I always did. And I tell people, no one in my family ever forced me to play the game. No one ever told me to pick up a glove or a bat. I wanted to, and I loved it. And as I kept getting older, or as I got older, I realized this was a sport that, you know, through the good and the bad, was a part of me. And, you know, I'd probably say then when I got into high school, was realizing that, all right, I have potential and I can do certain things that could get me to that next level, but still time will tell. But I believed I could start doing it once I got into high school, where we went down to some of these big showcases and you have success against guys that are also some of the top players in the country. That was a good, yeah. So to age wise, probably like 14, 15, but again, getting there, I didn't know how I'd get there, but thinking, well, maybe something's there, but I still got to, you know, work my tail off.
Yeah. You're not a short person.
No,
you're a fairly tall guy. You played basketball. To me, one of the most interesting things that has been, like, told ever about your dad is his passion for pickup basketball. Was there ever, did you think about taking a different sport into, you know, carving out something else in basketball? Because again, if I was 6'5", I would spend probably 90% of my days just in a hoop in my backyard trying to dunk.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, in some cases, I always think back of, you know, if I just devoted all of my time to playing basketball, because that's a sport, I think people might hate me saying this, but that might be like my true passion, just because, and what I mean by that, I love baseball. Like, it is a part of my identity, but basketball, for me, I didn't have the expectation, and I could go out there and just be truly who I was. And it's just so much fun to run up and down the court and compete. And you kind of have to move on to the next play just like that. Baseball, you get out, you got to sit there and you're thinking about that at bat. And it's a constant, you know, it's a game of failure, consistently a game of failure. But I remember I went to a camp at Virginia when I was after my sophomore year, or during my sophomore year. And it was when Tony Bennett just started there. And so Virginia wasn't really on the up and up yet. They were still trying to figure it out. But Tony goes, hey, I love your skill set, but two things got to happen. You know, you either got to quit playing baseball and just focus on basketball and see where that goes, or you got to grow to be 6'7", 6'8", and then you can play a different position. Cause I was big, but I wasn't quick, you know? So I needed to kind of fill a role. And obviously I couldn't put down the bat and glove, but yeah, now that I'm done playing baseball, I am fully back into playing competitive basketball when I'm not, you know, running around through all the other media, you know, jobs that I have right now.
Yeah, you got to find some way to scratch the competitive itch. So something I was curious about, obviously, you know, you grow up with the Hall of Fame father, uncle, things like that. It seems like there'd be, you know, easy, quick resource for getting better at baseball, for tips and things like that. But as you get older, as you get into high school and even college and pro ball, how do you kind of compartmentalize the advice that you should take and how? Because is there such thing as too much good information? Like, your father was a noted batting stance tinkerer. When you have that at home, your high school coach is a big leaguer, things like that. How do you process? And this is kind of could be a general question for anyone playing in college, anyone playing in pro ball, because pro ball, you know, every level has their different instructors. How do you, you know, kind of streamline the advice you're getting from all angles and wrap that all into, this is who I am as a hitter, and this is what I can apply, this is what I should apply?
Yeah, I mean, looking back, you know, I definitely was exposed to the game more than people, you know, more than 99% of the population. Probably could even be in a higher, but it could be 99.99, right? You know, it just, it was a unique perspective that I had. However, I think when you're younger and you're trying to figure out what works for you, I think that's the biggest thing, and being open to that and knowing that you're going to have to continue to make adjustments. And I'll be honest, I felt, because of the success that some of these, you know, my family members had, and mainly I didn't work as much with anything with my uncle, it was mainly my dad. And he has such great advice, but also there's things that worked for him that not necessarily worked for me. And also I felt a little bit nervous then about working with other coaches. And I felt like, well, I was so used to working with my dad. How do I work with, you know, Larry Sheets as my high school coach, like who you're referencing as being a former big leaguer, and then any other coach. And I think it's always in hindsight, because if I could tell kids or players now, it doesn't mean when coaches want to work with you. And that's the one thing. One thing I don't like what coaches do is when they say, hey, you got to do this, like, this is what you have to change. There's no one way to hit that's right, even at the top level. You know, what worked for my dad isn't going to work for, you know, a lot of other kids. He had to feel what was going on. He could connect his brain to his physical skills, or what he was feeling in that moment. So I think I just tell kids, you got to learn to be open-minded. You got to learn to adapt. And the biggest thing is to learn how to be your best coach, because that's going to help you with anybody that you work with. Because if you have an idea of what you want to do, then everyone else can help bring some ideas to the table. But then the baseline and foundation is that you have an idea of who you are. And that's a tough thing to ask of a kid at a young age, but I that's what I preach to people now. The more you can understand and are willing to adapt and learn, that's going to help you. But make sure you at all times are continuing to be your own best coach.
And kind of a unique thing that you had to adapt to that not every kid does is, obviously, your last name is very notable. It's not even like your dad was a pro player with the last name Smith. It was obviously who you were, especially growing up in the city that your dad, you know, had a Hall of Fame career in. When did you realize that it's the thing people look at, a last name could open doors or help out or things like that? But something that I think is obvious is not just expectations, but you're going to get everyone's best. Like, I think back my senior year in college, we faced Mark Grudzielanek's nephew. And that was even like, there was like the, hey, there's a guy in this dugout who has big league bloodlines or in the opposite team. Like, you know, got to get him out. That's an obvious thing. Like, you are, you know, you would be circled in a lot of lineups. When did you realize that there was going to be some undue attention, both, you know, both positive coverage and also some extra scrutiny on what you did on the baseball field?
It's really actually probably correlates to when I started to figure out I had a chance to, you know, that I could do some things, you know, as a player and have success. So in that 14 to 15 range. And then where it really all came together was after we won our high school championship my sophomore year. And I remember I didn't have really any cares in the world. You're just kind of enjoying high school. You're going out and play with friends and you had success. And then after that, after we won, there was expectations at our school to win. But then now I was talking to different schools. I had a good summer. And now all the comparisons of me to my dad. And that's where that became more challenging for me, you know, because I felt like after the longest time, I was being judged regardless of what I did. It was never going to be good enough. And then people also would look at me as like, oh, you've had a lot of things given to you in your life. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I haven't been fortunate enough to be able to go to a good private school growing up and to be able to have a, you know, live a healthy life as a child. You know, I know a lot of people don't have that. But the other part is that people felt I was entitled. I didn't deserve it, didn't earn it, only solely based off of the name itself and where I was and nothing that I did. So it was just a hard thing as a teenager to try to deal with not only the expectations of no matter who when you're going up, you know, someone wants to prove that you aren't as good as people say you are, or that you don't deserve it. The other part of it too, is just a teenager and you're trying to figure out yourself. And that was hard for me to deal with kids my age of like, why don't you like me and you don't know me? And then why are parents getting on me? And I've never had any type of interactions with you either. That was a hard thing to deal with mentally. And as at that age, it took me, you know, until I got into pro ball to really kind of figure out how to handle that.
And with that too, like growing in yourself, getting to that age, you also then have to figure out where you're going after high school, which is a difficult decision for kids, even if they're not planning on playing sports. How did you evaluate that college, you know, the college decision? You also got drafted by the Orioles, but in figuring out where you wanted to go to school, what kind of program you wanted to slot into, how did you evaluate the recruiting process?
Well, honestly, that was the other part, is I didn't really understand it a ton. You know, and you think always if a big school talks to you, you get excited because you see some of these schools, if you watch on TV, you see, then if you go to the campuses and you see like, wow, these places are incredible, you know? And, you know, for me, that was like with South Carolina. It's like, well, I was blown away by everything that they were doing and the whole experience that it would bring.
Back-to-back rings too.
And then they lost in the World Series the year before I went in there. So just, they have all the success, but then you're not thinking about, you know, what's really the best for my own development. So I would just encourage people, you don't need to go, like, if you go to the big schools and you can, and you're going to go and play, it's an amazing experience. But what I will say for other people, there's a reason why so many players are drafted out of schools that you may or may not have heard of, is because they get the chance to develop and go and figure out themselves. So looking back, you know, I probably would have gone to Wake Forest. That was one in my gut that still kind of bothers me to this day. And look how good Wake is now. But back then, Wake wasn't at that level yet. But they gave they gave players a lot of chances to develop. And that's really what you need to do, is to develop. And as far as for the draft and all of that, trying to, you know, figure out where to go in college, it was, you know, do you want to start your career? You know, we look at it as baseball as a sport, but it was really starting a job. And, you know, I go back and forth on that a lot of what if I had just gone into it right away. But mentally, I probably wasn't ready, because the grind of minor league baseball or baseball in general, it is way more strenuous. And especially if you don't have a grip on who you are as a person, you're going to find yourself in a tough spot, you know, more times than not.
Mm-hmm. And piggybacking on that, looking for the spot where you're going to get an opportunity to get to play, I redshirted my freshman year too, like you did, mm-hmm. in South Carolina. And yep. I will contend it's a lonely and very strange feeling if you've been playing a game 4 years, and especially in high school now with how travel ball is and stuff, you're playing, you know, close to 100 games a year, summer, fall, and then your spring season, and going into that. At what point during that tenure in South Carolina did you realize that this might not be the fit for me? I'm tired of not playing.
Honestly, you know, it was during after I knew I was going to redshirt and sit out, and having a conversation, and it was an open conversation. And at the time, I was frustrated with, so Chad Holbrook took over as the coach. Ray Tanner actually stepped down to be the AD, you know, weeks before I got on campus. And at the time, I was frustrated with how the whole situation went about, you know, just because, you know, you don't know what's going on. You want to play, you feel embarrassed, you're young, and you feel like you should be doing more, right? But also, as you get older, you understand that college athletics, especially at the big schools, you know, their livelihoods are on the line. And so as I got older, I don't blame Chad Holbrook at all for having the conversation of saying, hey, this is how it is. And he made a point to me of, hey, we want to develop guys, but, you know, and I could tell first year, you got to live up to that because we have to win. And not that he said anything poorly in that situation, but I realized that, okay, the development part is not something that's going to be at the forefront, and not that that's not what you want, but I could feel the pressure. I mean, shoot, you go into a situation like that where South Carolina is the most dominant program, but it's not just there. It's other big schools too, where the same thing happens when people are trying to establish themselves. And so that was the moment right after that of going, you know what? I've met a lot of great people. It was hard to switch up and leave. And I didn't like that I was running away from competition, because that's not how I feel. But it was more so of, I got to give myself a legit chance, because I feel I will always wonder, if I don't put myself in a position that I think I could succeed, you know, would I have the what if later in life? So that's why I made the choice then to go to Indian River State College, a junior college in Florida, you know, for my sophomore year, but really my redshirt freshman year.
And the same question I asked your South Carolina and Indian River teammate, George Iskandarian, how do you wind up at Indian River College? Because the thing is, like, if you told me, hey, you can go to a school out of high school, well, I know where South Carolina is. I know where Wake Forest is. Like, the big schools, it's obvious, you know, those are the ones that you actually apply to. How do you wind up at a junior college in Florida?
Good old IRSC, right? Especially Fort Pierce, Florida. You probably have never heard of it if you're not from the region. And they actually have developed some good baseball players out of Indian River. But I knew, or George and I had conversations leading into that process. But for me, because George was still playing and didn't have the, you know, wasn't coming to that decision to leave at all. So when he was playing, he's focusing on South Carolina. But for me, it's like, okay, well, where is good junior college baseball and the development down in Florida? You could play all year round. Didn't have to worry about, you know, the conditions too bad. And that specific league had some great players come out of it. And so it was like, okay, that could be a fit. So what schools down there could work? And actually there was this two schools I was looking at. It was Indian River State College and then Chipola, which is on the Gulf Coast. And both had reputations for sending guys to the draft or on to the next, you know, back into Division I. And, you know, it was really just the fit of the coaches at Indian River. They, again, I felt bad. They had to deal with all my up and down emotions of a kid that didn't know how to handle himself as far as like worrying about the draft and worrying about the next stage. But, Mitch Markham was our head coach, and he gave George and I the belief, in ourselves again. And that was something that I can't thank him enough for that. So that's really why we ended up there, is that we were able to find yourself. And you talk about finding passion and love for the game. You go to junior college, you don't have all those amenities. You know, you're lucky if you have a cage in there on campus and you're able to do what you want, you know, and Indian River provided that. And then we had the love for the game. But really down there, it brought the love back for us. And so that was, so I tell people, like, junior college to me really was a valuable tool. Even if it's a place that probably 95% of people haven't heard of.
I always tell people that junior college baseball or small school baseball will tell a kid right away if they actually love baseball or if they just like playing baseball, because you've got to love it. Because again, like, you leave South Carolina, a school that has a big football game every Saturday and a bunch of people and great baseball facilities and things like that. And when you trade that in, you've got to actually have that love for baseball. With that, I wonder if, you know, you played, you know, you, again, like you said, you played high school in the city that your dad was pretty famous in. Then you go to a big school like South Carolina that has a media apparatus. You still carry that name. It's enough where there are like blogs written about you, you know, announcing your red shirt and things like that. Was there any like relief to maybe get a little farther out of some spotlight and just be able to focus on baseball? Like, was there still some scrutiny, or were you able to kind of unwind in that way?
There's always been scrutiny no matter what. But I definitely felt way more self-conscious at South Carolina. Like, I felt like I failed and I was an embarrassment, not just to me, but it was feeling like I was just letting so many people down, because that's just how some things were worded is. And, you know, that's, I had to get off social media when I was at South Carolina completely, because I didn't want to be tempted to look up anything about myself. And I didn't want anybody to reach out to me and talk about it, you know, because that was something that I just really struggled with. And again, it goes back to being confident in who you are. And at the time, I wasn't confident in who Ryan was. And I felt like my successes on the field or failures were defining me as a person. And at that time, there was a lot of failure, and I felt really down. So again, the Indian River, that was the other thing, is no one really knows where that is. Sure, it got attention that I maybe went there, but no one knew who I was. No one knew what was going on. And I could full out, flat on, just be Ryan. And, you know, that was a ton of fun. You know, like I said, I'm sure if I'd said South Carolina, I mean, South Carolina, like, I just thought about the football games and all the things. Leaving there, I was like, man, am I going to regret this? Because it can just be a lot of fun. But I wouldn't have changed it, because, you know, like I said, I was able to, you know, take a step back and kind of work on myself, which I really needed to do.
And how would you compare? I'm always interested, the JUCO clubhouse culture versus like a four year. There's a, you know, a lot more hierarchy. You have the older guys. You're playing with guys who are grown men, guys who are 22, 23 years old, are either going to be in pro ball or going to be like working in the real in the real world next year. Things like that. JUCO is this much more like smaller set, you know, younger guys, you're all smashed together, you're trying to win, but there's also that looming, like, hey, you've got to figure out somewhere where to go after this. What about junior college in that environment clearly agreed with you?
Well, I think it was just kind of the relaxed nature, because some guys that were going in were just, they're down there just try to get better, and they didn't know what that next step would be. You know, some guys were like, am I going to go to a D1 school? Maybe. I think when guys come into the bigger D1 schools already, you're when you get there, because you are a talented player, but you're also getting there because you're being recruited and you're being told how great you are constantly. And I think that can mess with people's minds a little bit when you know, your stuff don't stink and you go in there. And you have this different perception of like, oh, okay, I guess I made it. And I'm not saying that's what everyone does, but in junior college, that they call it like a true grind, because this is not where you're ending up in 3 years, or after 2 years, you got to go somewhere else if you want to keep playing. In college there, unless you get drafted or they like release your scholarship, I mean, you're there. You know where you're going to be at least for that time. So I always thought that was really fascinating. And also junior college, it's a little bit more about, you know, and I said college baseball, it's a lot about winning, you know, and building team camaraderie. And you can build more of those relationships that way. If you know guys for 4 years, baseball guys can come and go. I mean, I only stayed at Indian River for 1 year. But I will say this, the guys that were there at Indian River JUCO were, they loved the play. They were easygoing. And I think that they just tried to enjoy the moment. And that was something I learned. And I tell people this, I wish I had not been thinking so far ahead to the draft that year, because it made me miss out on those moments, you know, and I regret that. So because those guys in junior college are really there to continue to prove themselves and to continue just to enjoy the game that they love. And like you said, junior college baseball, like, you truly got to love it, because if you don't, man, you are going to burn out, you know, before even the season begins.
Yeah. I mean, there's the thing with small schools and junior colleges. There are guys who leave school at semester that fall semester every year, because they're like, this isn't for me. But with that, you get to that 2014 draft of that first year at Indian River, and you have all the options. You could return to Indian River. You could move on to another 4-year school. You could get drafted. What made pro ball at that time the decision for you?
I think I was still stuck. You know, I was actually going to go to Wake Forest out of JUCO. But I felt like I needed to get my journey going in some cases. And I was more ready than I was a year and a half, 2 years ago. So that was kind of the thought process behind it. And again, looking back, you know, part of me still felt like I wish I'd gone for a year to Wake Forest, just because I still was having trouble mentally kind of putting aside, I some of these websites, you know, and this again, where you get too caught up, you know, some of these websites were ranking me pretty high for the JUCO rankings going into that season. And I put so much pressure and expectation on myself that I played bad, but I didn't play up to those levels of what people expected. And then I felt like I disappointed myself. But at that point though, I just felt like, all right, you know what, this is something I want to do. Get into it, figure it out, and continue to move on. And the Nationals also were a team that always followed me out of high school, always had a good relationship with them, and I really loved the people. So it just kind of felt like also being with that organization, you know, I was really excited. So really grateful for them. Didn't work out the way I wanted to at the end of the day, but I love the people there.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Well, with that, pro ball, once you sign, becomes really a race against time. You only have so many big league years in your body. Like, there at some point, time, like in Moneyball, time, the time comes for us all. Everyone has to retire. How many injury setbacks did you have in that early run?
So, to give context, this is perfect. It was, so I ended my, so junior college that season, our last game was like April, you know, whatever, 30th, or whatever it was. Whenever the last week of April, I signed, and my first game wasn't until the end of June, I believe, or first week of July. So I hadn't played in 2 months, essentially. And then, so you're in pro ball, I'm in the GCL at the time. I think it's renamed to the FCL. And I'm trying to figure out how to hit again. And I'm like, wow, this is hard. And I'm struggling, and it's like a spring training all over again. And then 2 weeks into me playing, and I feel like I'm about to turn the corner, I'm rounding second base in the pouring down rain. I misstep, roll my ankle, and get a grade 3 tear. And then so I missed the rest of that year in 2014. Rehab it, don't get surgery on it, and then go into spring training the next year, take a secondary lead in spring training, shuffle, coming down. And as my ankle was coming down, as the ball was crossing home plate, my ankle buckled and gave out again because the ligament never actually healed. So I had to then get surgery, missed 4 months. And then I was just in rehab mode. And I probably played, not rehab, just playing games, like maybe 1 month. So through my first year and a half of pro ball, I really only had a handful of games in my back pocket. And then 2016, my first full year, I still didn't trust the ankle, and I mentally was not in a good place. And then I stunk because I couldn't figure out how to, I didn't trust my body. I couldn't trust myself. And I just went down a rabbit hole. So there that happens. And then I come to the Orioles in 17. That's when kind of things changed around for me. But to your point, yeah, it is a time clock. They tell you down there, we're trying to move you up. And if you're not moving, that they are going to move on. And so when I had the injuries early, that was in the back of my mind of I'm losing my chance. Like I'm going to lose out on this opportunity. And that might have even put more pressure on myself. But so those injuries, and then I had a oblique injury in 19. But at that time, I'd already figured out myself. So I had confidence that when the time came, I'd be able to figure it out. But they're not lying about it. It's a business. And if their assets are not moving in the direction that they believe, they're going to replace you with somebody else. And that's just the reality of it. It's not mean-spirited in that case. It's just the harsh reality of how the sports industry works.
You talked about that mental rabbit hole, and pro ball can be a very lonely and isolating environment, especially compared to college. And, you know, one could say that you have, you know, you would have resources to talk to as far as, you know, how to handle life in professional baseball, how to, you know, how that life is going to be. But is there really, does most of that work, that finding self-belief, that learning how to be a professional, is there really any actual advice that someone could impart that would change the game? Or is that all like a self-realization journey? Just kind of, I mean, just like adulthood is in a lot of ways. Like, is that work you had to discover on your own?
It's a combination, but you definitely do have to discover it on your own. You can prepare for it, but until it clicks in your mind. And that's why when a lot of the high school players that come out and they go, you have all this talent, and they're going, why aren't guys moving quicker? It's because of the maturity level. Can they understand how to handle themselves as it goes? And I saw that with some young prospects as I was coming up, super talented, and their talent was giving them, you know, that you could see why they were moving, but there was a different part of them that they need to work on. Then you have other guys that are trying to make it and grind that needed to be locked in. But if they weren't locked in enough, they were going to have less opportunities just because of how much was invested in them. So I would say at the younger age, I think the hardest thing that you know, and this was my thing, is that baseball was already a game of failure. And then I already had expectations that were on me. And then I put more expectations because of the name. And then I added even my own expectations because of all of that. And I think that's in baseball. If you can understand and not be threatened or embarrassed by failure, you're going to have more success. And I think, because that's the hardest thing, is baseball, you're going to fail. The key to it is, how quickly can you get back up on your feet and make an adjustment? And the guys that do that the quickest turn out to be some of the best players. And it's not because of they're the most talented. You know, I think one of my pet peeves is when people say, oh, you're in pro ball. Like, oh, it's, you know, the guys got to the big leagues. Oh, they're just more talented. You see guys that good down the minors? I shake my head and I'm like, dude, you don't get it. You don't. There are guys that are more talented that never get to the big leagues. Guys that can hit the ball the furthest I've ever seen throw as hard as anybody else, has some of the nastiest stuff as a pitcher that you will come across, but they didn't get to the big leagues because they couldn't put it all together. And part of that, and the majority of that, had to do with them mentally being able to make those adjustments and to have that self-belief and also that self-awareness of, I need to continue to get better. And so that is something, if I could give any advice to someone right now, and I tell people, I do some lessons. When we're in the cage or we're working on stuff, coming from a guy that didn't do this enough, this is a safe space. You're going to fail. I don't care. You have to be okay that it's going to be a problem. My thing is, can you go and fix it when things go wrong? And if you can do that and bounce back, you are going to be way ahead of the game.
You talk about expectations too. You had positional expectations as a first baseman. First base has to be, the bat has to carry you up. Like, the only one I can think, like, I saw Evan White play first base and when he was in the minors, and it was like seeing God. Like, it was incredible. But most first basemen, like, it's got to be the bat. And when you're in that position, like, it is already a game of failure, but you hitting your way to the big leagues is difficult at any position. At first base, it's crazy. Was there pressure on your part? And again, I go back to tinkering and sourcing information. Is there a pressure on you? Like, I have got to find this swing to create power, drive runs. Like, I can't just be an average hitter. I have to, you know, how do you mentally grapple with that and the position that you're, you know, because of essentially your body type, you're stuck in.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was the thing of the longest time, but you know, for me, I was a big guy, or still I'm a big guy, but when I would do stuff, and it's usually in batting practice, hanging out, I go like, all right, I know I have a lot of power. And then, but then it's not showing up in the game the way that I want it to. And I'm like, you know, what the hell, what do I need to do to get this done? And then occasionally, I think I remember in junior college, and that was the same thing. It's like, I only had like one home run that spring. And I go, I can hit balls probably further than, you know, besides it was like George and I, Skandari and Iski and I, and BP, we were the two guys that could hit the ball the furthest and we could just launch it. And I go, but why can't I do that consistently enough the game? George had the same issue. George has some of the most power I've ever seen. Just easy power. But he had a hard time of trying to put that in the game as well. And I remember I hit my one home run in JUCO, and I was at the Yankee spring training complex, and I hit it literally a mile. And I'm going, man, that's amazing, but why can't I do this more often? And so that's where the expectation, the more and more you get into pro ball and you can't, and you're not doing that as much, you feel like then you try to press to do it more. Because you're right. Corner positions, especially first base, they want you to bang. They want you to drive guys in. And if you're not, they're going to find someone to put over there and train them how to play first base, or teach them how to play first base, because that's where the offense needs to come. So it's definitely, it's a true thing. No doubt it is. And that was something that I grappled with, quite frankly, my whole career.
And how much day-to-day adjustment goes into it? Like, how often are you, you know, you're starting a new series and you're in the cage before game one of the series and you're like, okay, I'm trying this new thing. Like, how how often are different adjustments or tweaks or things being implemented versus I've got to stay consistent with these mechanics or I'm going to fall apart?
Yeah, I think, again, it's when you try to figure out what works for you. And I think when you try to change too much, then you lose sight of what that was. So for me, where the light bulb kind of went off, and it was an 18 where I didn't have any home runs, I think going into May or going into June. And I was so frustrated. And then one day in July, I think I only had like one home run on the year. And I did batting practice where we tried something different down in Delmarva in low A. And it kept the same concept, but I was working on trying to wait back a little bit longer and try to just, you know, it's just, but I kept my same mechanics with it. Whatever it was, that thing kind of clicked. I hit six home runs, I think, the rest of the way, finished with seven. And then when I got to Frederick in 19 to start off the year, first 2 weeks, I had more extra base hits than I had singles, and I was feeling great. And then I got hurt for 6 weeks and all that happened. But I came back, played well, got promoted to double A. And I was going, you know what? Like, I think I'm getting this. And then that's that off season, I started to then really drive home. Okay, now that I got the concept, let me continue to hammer this as much as possible. Because it is really hard to make that type of adjustment during the season, because you're trying to stay afloat. You're trying to survive. And in the off season is really when you can digest it. So that it's a fine line for players to do that during season, because, you know, they can say all they want, all the staff members. And if they truly have an investment in you, but that's the thing, is not every player knows that, Kyle, you know what I mean? Not everyone knows, unless you got paid a lot in the draft. If you're a 15th round pick like me and you don't know where they stand on you, and they say, oh no, we're going to work with you, and like, hey, we're going to give you time, in the back of your mind, you go, well, how much time? If I go out there and I struggle for this for a month, are you still good? Is that fine? If I struggle the rest of the year, do you chalk it up as that's, hey, you're working on stuff, we still trust you? And the reality is you really don't know, because teams are going to make an evaluation. So guys can get very worried about that. You know, that's just the reality of the business. Most big adjustments usually happen in the off season.
And with that run with the Orioles, obviously all their affiliates are pretty close to home, pretty in like Orioles country. You know, as you come up and you're a little more at peace with who you are as a person, was there benefit to playing in front of, you know, Orioles fans who obviously grew up seeing your dad? Like, did you feel supported? Did you feel scrutinized? Was it a mix of both? Like, were there some cool moments?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I was so worried about signing with the Orioles when the time came. There's a couple other teams I was talking to. And it just seemed that the Orioles were going to give me the best opportunity of the three. And I was like, oh gosh, like, this is going to be brutal, you know? But honestly, they treated me so well. They made me feel very comfortable. And not when they say they treated me so well, they treated me like Ryan. They didn't treat me like a Ripken. And that's something that people might be surprised with. But that was what I was worried about, and it was awesome that I could just be me. And, you know, it was cool going back to play in certain places. But I will say, everyone probably thinks I went to Aberdeen, and it's got Ripken Stadium on there, which – we don't own the stadium, the name's on it. You know, the team, my dad is affiliated with the team, but again, like, no team control, the Orioles control the team, right? Just, you know, whatever. I have family up there supported me. It was really great to be around them. But I still remember one night, I went and made a play to my right, two outs in the ninth. If I make the play, make a good throw, the pitcher was going to cover, game's over. But I went to my right, and then I came back, spun, threw it to first, and overthrew first the pitcher covering. The tying run scored, and the go-ahead run scored. And there was like 3,000 people there maybe, but it's kind of dwindling out, and there's like a mist. And there's just this one fan reaming me. You're a disgrace to the family, to the name. You're wasting a roster spot. Give it to someone who deserves it. And I'm like, it's good to be home. You know, like, but you sit there and you have those moments that you're like, damn, even in your home stadium, and not saying Ripken Stadium, just your home, like I was just an iron bird. But, you know, but overall, though, the home fans, wherever I went, were really supportive. And I tried my best for the ones that took the time and effort to come watch and be around and made me feel comfortable and special. I tried to give that back to them as much as I could.
Well, and just the two, you mentioned like friends and family. A lot of minor leaguers, like if you were drafted by the Giants, your friends and family probably are not ever coming to see you play. No. And for a lot of minor leaguers, that's a reality. Is there like a comfort in it's kind of like feels like, you know, high school where your family comes and sees you play, like at Indian River. I can't imagine that friends and family were in the stands that often. What, I mean, is that a helper?
You know, I think the biggest helper of it all was whether or not I had family and friends come to the game, which was always nice. It was honestly then when I had downtime that I could go see them after games, after on off days. And, you know, when I was in Frederick and Bowie in Aberdeen, I could live in Baltimore and commute to the stadiums. Yes, it'd be 45 to an hour each drive, but I made that each day because I got to go home. I got to be around people. And I think that's the baseball life, as you just said, when people go away, you're away for 8 months. And so a lot of people don't have the option to be in their hometown or to see their friends and family. And for me, that the biggest thing was when I needed a reset and I had an off day or I needed to just hang out with someone, I could do that. And, you know, that to me was so rare. Like that to me was the coolest part, because you can feel, you said isolated. It's a perfect way to describe it. You feel like when you go away, you're removed from the everyday world. And not that that's necessarily true, but you can't go see your friends and family. You can't go do any of these things. And you're literally living two separate lives from the ones that you left to go play and the ones that are back, you know, doing their own thing. So, it was one of the cool moments that I don't think a lot of guys can say that they were able to do.
And what made the, you know, what was the kicker in the decision that made you decide to wind down the playing career, shift into media?
Well, it was opportunity, you know, first and foremost, where, you know, and it affects, COVID affected a lot of players in so many ways, right? So 19, felt like I had a lot of momentum. You know, I finished in Bowie, hit 280, whatever up there, and I was feeling really good. I felt like I told you, I was getting my swing and feeling like I got it. I'm right there. COVID hits and you feel like you take a step back. You get older a year. And 21, you know, my opportunities to play lessened. And then when I had the chance to play, granted, I was dealing with a ailment that I had to get surgery on in the off season, but I didn't play well when I had the opportunity. It didn't matter if I didn't play for 5 days or 3 days, 10 days. You got to perform when you get the chance. And I didn't. And I didn't want to go and play elsewhere at that point. It's if I could go play affiliated ball again, I would have given it a chance. But the grind of it, you know, and there's so much more in life. And I just thought this would be the time for me to start fresh. Now, was it easy? Hell no. You know, I think everyone, you get afraid of that, of what the next step's going to be. And right now I'm still sitting here. I'm doing all these different things, but I'm still sitting here. I'm like, well, you know, what the hell am I going to do with my life? And that's okay. That's all right. But do I miss playing every day? Like I said, and start this? Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing like getting out there and grinding with the guys. And it's a part of your life that's not many people can do. And at some point, regardless of how great you are, it comes to an end. You know, my dad was the rare one in 20 years, and he set a terrible example for me because it's so unrealistic. A lot of guys, whether you play into high school, it's an accomplishment. You get to play in college, it's an accomplishment. You get drafted, it's an accomplishment. But at the end of the day, it's going to end. And it's going to be over. So that was me at the point of it being over, but I'm grateful then that I still had. Started playing T-ball when I was, you know, 4 or 5, whatever it was. Retired at 28. You know, I had 24 years of baseball and memories that I was grateful for. And that's more years than people who wish they could, you know, got to experience.
Yeah, I think I go back to that Moneyball scene. I think it's just a really just great piece of writing. Just the time comes for it. It doesn't matter if you are Cal Ripken Jr. or if you're, I mean, Barry Bonds and no one will sign you. But like everyone at some point has to hang it up. So if you could go back and give yourself a pep talk on the day you signed with the Nationals, you know, 20-year-old, 21-year-old, what would that pep talk look like?
Everything is it's temporary. And you really need to enjoy the moment and don't worry about what you need to do and how to get there. I think so far, so much. And even at that time, I was looking at, I need to get to the big leagues, and you're looking at how to get there without going through the ride. And actually, I still remember this, my hitting coach in Aberdeen in 17, Tim Raines Jr. Really, and that whole staff, we had Mark Hendrickson, pitching coach, Kevin Bradshaw was our manager, and Ramon Sambo was our third base coach. And there was such a great group of guys, but I remember one day I was having a conversation with Rock, and he said, you know, look, I don't care about what's going on. He goes, but this isn't going to last forever. And I know you feel terrible with your swing, but let's just say, give me each at bat, give me a plan. If you can give me a plan each and every at bat, that's all I want you to do. And enjoy this group as much as possible. That stuck with me. And I will say, I forgot to leave this part out, but when I got released and you have that moment that it's over, you look back at stuff and going, I really worried about all this crap. And I think that's the pep talk I would give. Stop caring about what could happen and just start thinking about how can I be right here right now? Because you're going to look back and you're going to have your own regrets. So you might as well enjoy each moment and not try to stress about things that are out of your control. So that would be my pep talk. And hopefully maybe things would have been different, but for everyone else that's out there, enjoy it. Enjoy the fun times and the bad. And guess what? You play baseball long enough, you are going to fail a ton. Get used to it. But that's what makes the journey special.
I got a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out.
All right, let's do it.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
Oh, man. I thought it was always cool going to Brooklyn. When I played there, oh, I got to think about it. There was one in, Columbia, South Carolina was a great stadium, and Charleston, South Carolina, but did not enjoy the weather. That was too damn hot.
That humidity, man. Best pitcher you ever faced?
That is a good question. Tristan McKenzie was very tough. There was one more in there when I sat there. Oh man, try to go through all the guys at the time that came up there. And who'd we play a ton? We played the Yankees a ton. Yeah, I'll probably stay with McKenzie because I'm blanking on some other guys. We'll stick with
nasty.
He's gross. And that was the thing. He's so tall, he was so skinny. And I'm like, the ball just seems like you're just gonna put it in the mitt by the time you let go of it. And I saw him in short season, and boy, did he, at that moment I go, that guy's going to be in the big leagues. No doubt.
You have a guest come into Baltimore for a day. Where do you take them to breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Oh man. So into Baltimore, into the city, huh? Okay.
Well, in the city.
Well, I feel like if you have to, so I've become really good friends with people at the Iron Rooster. Kyle's the owner. So we probably go and get these giant Pop-Tarts. They're massive. Have some brunch there. Have some good times. Probably take you home. Give you 8 or 9. probably go around. I like going into, I was in Fells Point in Canton. It's got the cobblestone street. You can even take the water taxi through the harbor. We're going to go get crabs in the city. A place that I went to all the times was Captain James. You can just sit right on the water. I know a lot of people have their crab spots in Baltimore. That just was mine. I had a lot of memories and a lot of great crabs there. And it depends on what you want to do for dinner, but there's so many great neighborhoods. If it's around the sports seasons and times, I'll probably take you people over into to Federal Hill to get the thing. I think on game days in Baltimore with the Ravens, it's just a whole different world. That's a great experience. So probably going to the Federal Hill to go over the bridge into the stadium. And then for Orioles games, Pickles Pub, I'd never experienced it until I was done playing, but it's a bar right outside of Camden Yards, kind of staple. And then food, man, I could eat a ton of food. Where would I go for dinner? There's this one neighborhood. I won't say it's like one specific restaurant, but there's a neighborhood right outside of, it's considered still Baltimore City. It's called Hamden. And it's kind of, it gives you kind of this hipster vibe, but you walk down that street, it's got all these great restaurants. Some you can think, where are you taking me? And you walk out of going, that was delicious. One of those places called, the one place I've never had more fun at one time, it's called Holy Frijoles. And I go, this place just has pinballs in there, pinball machines, and I can get like a $3 a drink for whatever. I thought that was great. And then there's another place called the Food Market that's right there. So that'd probably be my day. Take you to those areas. I think Baltimore gets a bad rep for a lot of things, but you come hang with me, Kyle, we'll be sure, or any guest, we'll be sure to have a good time.
That's the exact kind of scouting report I needed. Do you have a copy of the most famous baseball card in your family's history?
I know you're not referring to any of my fathers here.
Definitely not your father's.
I don't have that one as my personal keepsake. Do we have some of those? Yes, there is. It is somewhere that I have no idea. It's probably locked up in storage.
Yeah, folks, if you know, you know. Last one I've got for you. Everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues or junior college? Because I've heard some good junior college ones, too.
I've got many nightmare ones. I got two. Well, one, and I actually explained this one on my recent episode. Driver Dan was his name. We were in going to Connecticut. And actually, we're leaving Connecticut. And this whole story, actually, will all wrap together. It started off that we got to Connecticut to play the Detroit Tigers short season, and they didn't have enough rooms for us. So we had to, you have two beds on the road, so just be you and a roommate. We had to put four in a room. We had to quadruple up into like these queen or like, maybe, I think they're even more twin beds. So two to a bed. To say that was an experience is an understatement.
Again, you are 6'5".
Yes, and I like my space, and I like my teammates, but not that close at that hour. It was like 4 a.m. too when we were trying to get this all sorted out. And then after that series, we were leaving Connecticut to go to Brooklyn, and the last game, like in the middle of the inning or middle of the game, Driver Dan had the bus, I think, parked too close to the field, shattered, foul ball shatters part of the window. And then we have to like duct tape it, put on like this plastic sheet, and then it starts pissing rain on the drive. And so then the water's coming in, our coaches are like holding it down. I'm of course a couple rows back, and we're just, you gotta laugh. You're like, this is just ridiculous. The other one that I just would mention was in Asheville, North Carolina, coming back. So Asheville was the Rockies, or still is, I forget. And we're driving back to Hagerstown, Maryland, and it is, the bus AC is not working. It's hot as hell. The bus has to pull over, and the driver goes outside and says, hey, the engine's overheated. I need to throw water on it. So he throws water on it. It's supposed to be a 6-hour drive. I ended up taking almost 9 hours to get there. But the next stop We had to pull over again, engine overheated. He had to take, our coach got on the intercom or whatever. It's like, hey guys, can you pass your water bottles and jugs up? So we had to pass our water gallons and jugs and just start dousing the engine. And I'm like, this is just ridiculous. It's 90 some degrees on this bus. Now we got no water. I think we just got our asses kicked. I'm tired. And then our GM, I think in Hagerstown, had to meet us 2 hours out to then put a 5 gallon jug on the engine again. And then we got home. So that was, that was one that I will never forget for so many
those
reasons.
Those are some all timers.
Yeah.
So we have not had window shattered yet. That is, we'll check that one off the box, but Ryan Ripken, that is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom of the Farm.
Of course.
And that's it for today's episode from Phenom of the Farm. Big thanks to Ryan Ripken for joining. If you enjoyed this episode, you can go check out Ryan's podcast, Off Script with Rip, and make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. And for from Phenom of the Farm, we'll catch you next Tuesday. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.